You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And you're listening to our episode with casting director and mother, Tara Rubin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And today we have one of the top casting directors in New York City. Her shows currently running on Broadway are Six, Dear Evan Hansen, Ain't Too Proud, Phantom of the Opera, Sing Street, which is coming in.
You're very busy.
Extremely busy. So many projects coming up. And in a way, Tara Rubin, who is with us, is responsible for this podcast even existing because she cast Jersey Boys, and that is where Jessica and I met.
Yep.
So, welcome, Tara Rubin.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
We are so excited. As you know, this is International Women's Month, and we are highlighting women who have really taken control, I would say, and made their way and made a way for themselves and
made
powerful
their way,
women.
Yeah, in an industry that maybe is a little more dominated by men and have found their way through that. And of course, not to be forgotten, Tara is a mom.
Yes. Just add that to the mix.
Exactly.
Tara, will you tell us about your children?
First of all, I want to say how fun it is to be here. And secondly, like, I couldn't believe that the first question was, tell us about your children, which obviously it is, given this podcast. But, you know, how infrequently that is a leading question for anyone in our business. And so, and also, you know, as moms, we love to talk about our children, and we have to kind of keep that in check a lot of times so we don't do it too much. But my daughters are 28 and 26. Lizzie is the older one, and Juliet is younger. And I'm just incredibly proud of them. They're very sensitive, they have great sense of humor, great sense of irony. And they're just lovely people. One thing I'm really proud of is they're very close with each other. They shared a bedroom growing up, you know, growing up in New York City.
Right.
They went to school together their entire lives in New York and then chose to go to college together, was pretty incredible. And they both live in Brooklyn now, and they're you know, very close and spend a lot of time together. So that makes me really happy.
That's so special.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know how siblings are going to be, right? I mean, it's like my brother and I, well, we're 6.5 years apart. And so we definitely went through a phase where it was like, he's annoying and I don't want him. But to think of having a sister so close in age and shared experiences and the fact that they didn't fight. I mean, I'm sure they had their moments, but they're so close, you know.
I think there's something to that sharing a room too. My husband is one of six kids, and when he was 11, they all moved to New York, and he shared a room with three of his siblings. So there were four kids in one room and two kids in another, and they're really, really close. They're like a really close-knit family. So I think there's something about having to be like kind of having shared space, shared personal space.
And limited shared space. I think, you know, if there was one television, so if we were going to watch television, everybody had to do it together, or yeah, someone had to go do something else. And the only other thing you could really do was, you know, play with your toys or read or something. Mm-hmm. So I think that was really helpful. And there was, you know, a living room, a dining room, and two bedrooms. That was yeah, kind of the apartment. And so, you know, there was a lot of gathering at the dining room table to do homework, to do SAT mm-hmm, prep. They would do their homework and I would work, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that, you know, there's so many. I loved raising kids in New York City. And
I like to hear that.
I really see, like, what those advantages, you know, that really was sort of an advantage. I could really keep close tabs on them without, like, pretending that I wasn't, you
right,
know?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, raising kids here is such a strange and wonderful thing in ways. And we're raising Elliot here, and we want to stay in the city. And I do think that the closeness of our space really helps to foster our relationship with her and with the kids in the community too, you know. Yeah. I mean, you tend to have your playground group as opposed to, like, yes, maybe in the burbs where you don't get to the playground as often because you have your own backyard or whatever. And so, yeah, I like to hear that it went so well.
Well,
they turned out well.
I mean, I didn't go that far. But I also would say that, you know, as a working parent, it worked. And my husband worked all the time. He also, you know, has a little business, and he was working a lot. So if I were a stay-at-home mom and I had only those four rooms as my territory, and, you know, I might have felt completely differently about it. Right. But, you know, in the time that we did have together, it worked really well.
I don't know. I mean, I am currently in the burbs and currently not in a show, and being in the suburbs and not having the energy of the city drives me insane. So, you know, I get in here as much as I possibly can.
You can come to my house.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming Tara Rubin Casting? We know for years you worked with Jeffrey Johnson and Vinnie Liff, and who were so well known in our industry. Yeah. And I had the opportunity to audition for them a little bit when I was starting out. But tell us a little bit about your journey.
Well, I worked there for 15 years, and I started as the casting assistant and just sort of stuck around. And so, you know, I think about their influence on me kind of every day, because I did have, you know, the opportunity to live and work with the, like, such pioneers in,
yeah,
our business.
They were really amongst, like,
the
titans.
Yeah, and amongst the first independent casting directors, and amongst the first who kind of maintained long-running shows and had multiple companies of shows. So the whole sort of, like, format for that, you know, I feel like I got they laid the groundwork for that, and I was able to be a part of, you know, I learned that from them. So, yeah, they're a part of every day. They also, they loved their work, and that was infectious, too, I think. Yeah. So no matter, you know, what was going on or how pressured or stressful or you know, overworked we were, there was always, like, a sense of camaraderie and humor and, you know, it might be 9 o'clock and we just, you know, finished up, but the spirit of that company is something that I feel really fortunate to have learned and been a part of. So I worked there for 15 years, and then, you know, I was just at that place, I think, where I was thinking, is this the most I'm going to do? Mm-hmm. And I knew I loved casting, but they also had been doing it for quite a while, and I wasn't sure, you know, if I should sort of, like, try to stay and take over their business, or, you know, mm-hmm, when the time came. And, you know, it was difficult because we were so close, and but I kind of just knew I had to do it. I just wanted to see how much I could possibly accomplish, you know, in my own time here. So, and, you know, it's a great tribute to them that we stayed really I mean, Jeff is still amongst my best friends. I see him a lot. We do a lot of things together. So a tribute to them, I think, that we were able to make that change and remain close.
He allowed you to fly free.
Yes,
almost
they
like
did.
A parent, you know.
They did. And so, you know, then that gave me a great foundation. You know, also I think the fact that I had done it for so long, I kind of had the support of like the agent community and people were like, "Oh, she's going on her own now." And so so I know that like I was a really lucky person. I worked really hard, but I was really lucky when I started on my own.
Well, and when you started, when you decided to branch off onto your own, did you have your daughters at that point? Because I can imagine taking on the idea of beginning this business of casting in New York City with, I'm assuming, small girls.
Yes, they were. It was 2001, so they were, what, like, you know, 7 and 9. And, I didn't really think it through,
like which what is probably that better, which right? Is
like what the impact was going to be on my personal life, and I didn't expect really to be quite as busy as I was from the very beginning. So, but I had an amazing babysitter, Giselle, who's still one of my closest friends, and so she, you know, I couldn't have done it without her. Mm-hmm. And the girls are still really close friends with her, and she has two daughters that we. You know, so we're kind of blended on with them. And so that made a big difference, you know, having, because I didn't have family close by. So that made a huge difference, having a great babysitter who stayed with us for 12 years.
So to that end, you mentioned the girls were 7 and 9 when you started your own company. And that would mean that you were pregnant while you were over at Johnson Lift, right? So how was that for you? I mean, it was the 90s, so it wasn't like prehistoric times with women working in the workplace and mothers, but it definitely wasn't where we are now.
You know, they were, Vinny and Jeff had, I don't think anyone had ever been married who worked there. So then having someone who was going to be a parent,
right.
A mom, was really kind of a new thing for them. And they, just as I think as a part of who they were as people, they sort of embraced it. They were amazing about it. I guess if you had asked them at the time, they would have said, "Oh, well, this is our policy," but it wasn't even policy. It was just whatever I needed, you know, was available to me. So with Lizzie, I took 2 months off, and with Juliet, I think I took a little over 3. So, you know, they allowed for that. But also at that time, there was a sense that, you know, I didn't expect very many accommodations because that just was the way it was. And so anytime I asked for one, they were happy to grant it. It all went pretty smoothly, you know, and they were incredibly generous about, you know, whatever I needed. I just didn't ask for very much, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think there's still there's still a bit of that today. Yeah. I mean, you get an offer and it's like, oh, do I bring up my child? Do I talk about the fact that I need an extra room in my housing or whatever, you know, or, plane tickets.
Do I mention it in the room, you know, in the audition room? I feel like sometimes I mention my kids if it's a scene that I'm playing a mother or something like that. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. I don't know if it's beneficial to bring it into the room, although I don't want to hide it.
No,
you know?
No.
I think it's important that you all mention it because the more you do, the more it just becomes a standard of, you know, our
just
industry
life,
and our lives. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to adjust to agents saying things like, well, she has childcare issues. She can't take that appointment. And I was like, well, can't she get a babysitter? That's mm-hmm. what I always did. And then I really began to shift that thinking and realize that the more people speak up about the needs that parents have and moms have in the workplace, the more like policy will just have to change mm-hmm. because, you know, there's no way around it. So I don't know how much that is happening. I know people like Ann Cord at Disney is working really hard and make a policy that's advantageous for parents and particularly for women, since women take, you know, oftentimes take a a bigger role in parenting than. So, you know, I think that the speaking up is a good thing.
Well, thanks for saying that. I mean, that's good to hear because, and I wonder.
And for our listeners too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, of course, you are a woman and a mother. So you might be a little, I mean, I would think you probably are a little more.
Yeah.
Well, open to that.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, I have to check myself sometimes because I'll think like, let's say if this person wants to tour and I'll think, she has kids. I don't know if she'll be able to. And then I think like, it's not my job to decide whether or not, you know, I can call her in, like, let her tell me if she, and so it just, you know, it's a lifetime of thinking one way and learning how to change it.
Well, even before we started, you said you had listened to the episode with Becky and Megan about touring with children and that it was educational to you in the ins and outs of what makes that possible. And they did it.
Yes.
So it wasn't a question. I mean, I know it took a lot of figuring out for them, but they were going to take the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, when something means a lot to you, or I mean, truthfully, when you need health weeks or when you need, you know, you have a family to support and, you know, it's something because I don't think they probably have ever talked about asking the men. Like, there was never a pause probably to say, like, well, let's not call him in because he has a child. You know, there's that double standard and mentality of, well, the mom is the one who would sacrifice and decide to, you know, quit the business or things like that. And I'm sure you've been in sessions where people probably think someone has quit the business or they've discounted or pushed people to the side because they are a mother or, you know. And so there was this sort of moment where you're like, do I talk about it? Sort of like with our age, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we're becoming more truthful and honest and real with just who we are as people. And while that's wonderful and very freeing, there's also that
fear.
There's
a fear.
Yeah. Especially because, you know, moms aren't sexy. Sorry, I just did air quotes. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and that's
I
a whole other topic about how we have to remain sexy in this industry.
Right. Yes. That's a whole other topic. Oh, but I'm sure that there comes a point where they're like, because I have someone in my mind who I know for sure the minute I had a child was like, oh, not sexy anymore. Gone. She's not gone. But, well, you know.
Yeah. And I had several people say to my manager, oh, I thought she left the business. And he was like, no, she didn't leave the business. Right. She had a kid. She went on maternity leave for 3 months or whatever. Like, she's back. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel the need to hide the fact that you were a mom?
It's not so much that I hid it as I didn't talk about it. And I think that, you know, I was so eager to be taken seriously. And that's what women of my generation, I think, tried to do. We tried to prove that we could do things that men did and that we could shoulder the responsibilities and that we were as smart and, you know, we could do it. And so in order to do that, you just kept that part of your life to the side. And, you know, the amount of discussion that takes place in the workplace nowadays about weddings and babies and all of that, it just wasn't a part of the work culture. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to be taken seriously, if you wanted to advance and if you wanted to be, and in casting, it was more like not so much advancing, but to be able to sit at a table and have a director take you seriously or to have a producer or a writer or, you know, actors. And so it was more that we just maintained it by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you didn't mention it. You didn't say to someone, well, I have a childcare issue. You got a babysitter. And I remember one time, and this was at a period where Giselle was going to college at night. So we had a second babysitter who came at like 4 so she could get to college. And then that babysitter stayed until like 7 when I got home from work or whatever. And I was in a meeting and there was the man who was running the meeting had just had a child. And he said, I'm so sorry. It was like 6 o'clock. And he said, I'm so sorry. I have to go. I have to bring this to an end because I have a nanny problem. And everybody at the meeting was like, oh, of course. Oh, please go. Yes, we understand. Oh, that's so, you know, it was so great that he had a nanny problem. And it was like, and I have the second shift coming in right now, you know.
Right.
The thing that kept me from being bitter about all of that was that when men came in and started circulating pictures of their new babies and men started saying, oh, I have to go, I have a violin concert, oh, I have to go, there's parent teacher, whatever it was, then it became okay for women to do it too. And so it ended up kind of having a great advantage to all of us, but it was just sort of irksome.
Yeah,
oh my gosh. Right? When you mentioned that story, I started to see flames. So.
But it just, you know, it was sort of, you know, it took, I think, men being married to women who were also working and continuing to work during the early childhood years. Mm-hmm. And it took them, you know, taking that interest in being a parent kind of changed it for the rest of us.
Well, the real co-parenting that has started, right, in our world. It's not like when women stayed home and did all of it and the fathers came in and said, good job, son, and then, you know, went to bed or whatever. So I think that as that has happened, I mean, that's refreshing, but also, yes, irksome for sure that, you know, women, because ultimately, not to discount men or the dads or those who are also parenting, but women do take on the bulk of all of it, the mental load. So when you already are working, oh my gosh, so many hours as you are, I know, in the casting process and also going to shows and going to that. I mean, you're constantly doing things. And then to have the mental load of scheduling the sitter and figuring that out and just also the doctor's appointments and all the things. It's like what they don't realize when they're sitting at the table is that we're probably the most fierce people sitting there because of all the things we have to manage. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the balls that we have to keep in the air, you want us on your team because we know how to multitask, you know, down, honey, you know? So it's like, bring us in. And I think also, you know, Casey Levy said this, it was actually one of our truth bombs, but I think what we are, you have a child, when you hire
an actor, you hire a whole person and we come with children.
Yes. Yeah. And that's true. Yeah. And I think that, like you said, the more of us that start to sort of speak up, and that's dads too. You know, I mean, Eric had a gig out of town and he said, I need XYZ for my wife and child. And he got it, you know, but
he also
didn't
hesitate to ask.
He did not hesitate to ask.
That's right.
Yeah. Whereas I asked for, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe could I ask for some help with childcare, you know, or whatever. And my agent, God love them, I was like, maybe we could find it in a different way. You know what I mean? There's still a hesitation, even though my agents are really great and they've never made me feel, you know, I remember I was pregnant after I'd only been with them for like 6 months as an agency. And I remember being so nervous to tell them that I'm about to be out of commission for a little bit, but they didn't hesitate. It was great. So
it speaks to this idea of visible parenting. And Georgia Stitt actually commented on this in our last episode that it actually is becoming harmful to be an invisible parent, to not talk about your children, to not let people know that that's part of your life, because we kind of live in this culture where women are doing it all, just like you did, and you felt the need to not talk about it because it just wasn't part of the ether at that time. But if we don't have this conversation of what's required of us at home for men and women, then we're never going to make the forward progress to have an equal viewpoint for us not to be nervous to ask for things as women. And same for men, you know what I mean? Yep. They're men in positions of power are saying, I want to be home for my kid's soccer game, or, you know, I can't do this because it's my son's school play, whatever it is, to kind of bring family into a higher level of importance in our society.
I so agree. I think that's so important. And I think we still have, a lot of a long way to go.
Yes,
with
agreed.
It.
Mm-hmm.
After the Women's Day on Broadway last year, a young woman who is a choreographer and married to a choreographer came up to me, and I said, oh, it was so fun. You know, your husband brought the baby to an audition. We had an audition. He had to bring the baby. It was only like an hour or two. And so, you know, the kids at the audition were taking pictures. And you know, I said, you know, we got to meet the baby. And she said, yeah, that's great for him, but I could never do that. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, she's right. The way I felt has not completely been erased. No. And we need to. And so, you know, what it's going to take is women bringing their kids to auditions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and it, you know, it Kristen Blodgett and I had to bring our kids to an audition one time, and I didn't have a babysitter, so she brought her child and her babysitter, and the kids played at the corner, and guess what? The audition took place.
Right.
You know, it didn't slow anything down. Mm-hmm. Work was accomplished as right. if there were no children present. And so, you know, it can happen, and everything still moves forward. When one of my staff, Lindsay Levine, had a baby, she worked from home most of the time. She came in when she needed to, and she cast like 3 Broadway shows in those conditions,
wow.
you know,
yeah.
with like a teeny infant, you mm-hmm. know. And so, you know, it can work.
Yeah,
But I felt sort of like, that really kind of broke my heart when I thought, of course, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I think it also has to do with status. Like, if you're the boss, you can do anything. So if you're the boss, you can have kids. If you're the producer, if you're the director, if you're, mm-hmm. but if you're an actor, you're a casting director, your place in the hierarchy is just not in a place where you feel like you can speak up about those things.
Yeah.
I think that has something to do with it too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's amazing that over all the years that you've been casting, you've only had like one or a few moments when you've had to bring one of your girls with you. You know what I mean? I just feel like the juggle. Of course, I'm having Giselle, I'm sure. Like, she was full-time
and nanny, on the weekends, I felt a little more comfortable doing it. Like,
yeah,
if we had a Saturday audition
right.
and things like that, I felt yeah. like, well, you know, we're just going to have to do this
right.
because there's no other way to do it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Well, speaking, you bring up weekend auditions. I feel like these have become more and more. Like, there was a time that where it was like Monday through Friday, and sort of you sort of knew as an actor, particularly if you weren't employed at the time, you're like, oh, I can go away for Saturday and Sunday, or
right.
I can just breathe easy,
or
whatever.
Know I have nothing to
or
work
at least
on this
Sunday.
Weekend.
Then it like started to be Saturday. Then yeah. Sunday, you're like, Sundays are good. But now it's like a 7-day week. And Tara, on top of that, the cell phones, the internet, the emails, you're so accessible. I mean, what has that been like? Like, the, you know, back in the day, you'd have to like go get a fax for your size or
actually bring in a hard copy, headshot, and resume.
Yeah, exactly.
Come by and pick it up.
Exactly. Go by and pick it up or like call your service.
Yeah, I used to drop scripts off at stage doors a lot, like on my way out of the office.
Yes, stop by your agent's office and get your size. I forgot about that.
We're aging ourselves for sure. But that is like,
I would tape them to the door, like when, you know, I'd be closing up at 8:30 and somebody still hadn't come by. So I would like, you know, tape it to the door for them and things like that. So, yeah, the technology has it's just, I guess no one foresaw the impact
right.
that it was going to have. All the great right. things, the, you know, being able to have things, you know, a script that had to go to LA overnight by FedEx is there in a second, all
right.
those things that are so great. But it also means that it's like, you know, you're pulling it behind you
right.
all the time. And it's no different. It comes, I think the capability, the fact that you can do it, to the producers, it makes them think, oh, well, then let's do it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you right. can go back to your office and get like 8 more people to come tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had a director who was doing it, and finally I had to just say, you know what, we need a day. We need, the actors yeah. need it. I need it. We can't just be, you know, turning this around overnight like
right.
that. And it's going to take a similar thing. It's going to take agents, and there are a few who say, like, we close our office at 6 o'clock. If this comes in after six, that's that. And, you know, it's, I don't know what to do about it, really. Yeah. You know, when someone says, well, we'll have to do this on Sunday at 10, because that's the only time I have, it's really, I'm not in a position,
right?
Quite frankly, if and I want still, to
and
stay.
And this is you, yeah, like you're Tara Rubin
Casting. If I want to stay competitive, I've got to say yes to doing it, you know?
But not just that, the around the clock. I mean, you must be working into the evening almost all the time.
Well, and you're getting sides at all 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, you're getting music at, at 8 o'clock at night.
Right.
You know? And so,
is there an, can I ask you, is there an awareness of when those moments happen? Because, I mean, yeah, it's one thing to get them a week before, or a few days before, or whatever. But when those come in like so late, and obviously it's not castings, it's the producers and the people needing to get it done. And then we're, the turnaround is so fast. And say, for instance, like I'm in a show. So something comes in for me at 8 o'clock at night. I can't look at that until maybe 11 or a little bit at intermission. And then I'm up at 6:45 with my child to get her to school. And the appointment is at 10. Do you know what I mean? It's like, is there any sort of consideration, have you noticed, taken? Or is it all just like, tough luck, figure it out, come in, and you know what I mean? Like, is there any sort of consideration taken? I'm always wondering, like, or I know you're aware that we just got it the night before.
We do try to say something. I'll try to say, like, jokingly, I know you've had a whole, you know, five hours with this, you know, a whole 24 hours with this material or whatever.
I guess.
I mean, in television and film, I think it happens a lot
more because
and that's just, you know, they're getting pages from their producers and I don't think that they have any more control, the casting directors in those projects, I don't think they have any more control over it than we do in the theater. But I don't know what can really change it, you know, as long as everybody's working on so many projects at the same time. The directors are going to carve out, you know, 2 hours on Sunday. And that's when they're going to want to do it. So I guess we just all have to kind of...
Well, it's we appreciate those moments when you say something jokingly to just sort of let them know, like, this is... We're trying to cram it. And we, of course, want to do the best we can, you know, to for the audition. But there's only so much you can... Get in there.
And it becomes sort of like, to like, why are we even doing this?
Right.
Like, this person has only had the material for a day.
Right.
You know, you all have like a minute and a half to concentrate on it, you know? Yeah. And so, like, what?
Does it really, is it worth the time?
Are we going, are we really going to accomplish anything under these conditions?
Right.
Because you want to get the best out of the people coming in, you know?
Yeah.
Right. You want to make it, You
want to
make
it. That's definitely a conversation that...
That's going to be ongoing.
I mean, it's just part of our society too. It doesn't, it's not just limited to casting. I mean, it's everything being reachable at any moment of the day. I mean, I just, and for me right now, like after I get my kids to bed, that's the time I can deal with emails. So in a way I'm thankful that I can sit down and take care of it, but I'm also not expecting anybody to answer me then. You know, I'm expecting them to answer me in their own time, in their own leisure. But I struggle a lot with being reachable all the time.
And I can only imagine with all the shows you've got
I
going,
can't
Tara.
Actually, I can imagine.
Only imagine the hundreds of. I'm sure you get hundreds of emails a day.
It's kind of it becomes like a big part of the day is dealing with the email, and I do a lot of that at night. And it's a great thing about the technology. You can time shift. I worked this morning before I came here, and that was great because now it's out of the way. You know.
Yeah.
And I used to have to go to the office to do it.
Right. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And,
well, at least you can do it at home.
Do things, you know, in your sweatpants.
So yeah.
So that's good.
Sit in your bed.
Yes.
Exactly.
Speaking of being, you know, getting the call or the email or whatever, you're the one who gets the email or phone call when a woman gets pregnant on a show and needs to take a maternity leave. What has been the response to that? Is it cut and dry? Do you get the feeling from producers that it's something that is inconvenient? I mean, how does that
probably varies
come through?
From
I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I personally have not heard, you know, oh, this is a terrible problem. Now we have to deal with it. if that has been said in another office or someplace else, it doesn't usually get down to me. And fortunately, your union has, you know, rules so that you can take some leave and your job is held for you. So that's good. I don't think it's enough leave and, you know, probably. And
we're working on it.
Compared to other countries, you know, where people take a year and what isn't Scandinavia there, oh like multiple years for child rearing.
I mean, that's,
it's a completely different work culture too. States.
Absolutely.
So.
And the economy and everything. But so no, I have to say I've never heard anyone say like, oh, I wish we could get rid of her. This is just so inconvenient. Or, I mean, it is, you know, it's always going to be an inconvenience to someone when a woman gets pregnant. Like that's just the way it is, you know, but fortunately.
But we're going to continue the human race. And so
there's always that.
We have to, you know, it is part of what, what it all is. Well, I want to say something. And I can only imagine like you're the way you are just in general, but, and this sort of ties into something that Rick Ellis has said about your office, which we'll get into creatively, but I just want to say personally, coming in for your office is such a treat always. It's always been that way. And everyone is so warm, and special shout out to Mary Sugarman. She's our girl. But, I just, you know, it's, you know, when you're going in for Tara Rubin casting that there's amount of pressure that's off. Like it's not, you don't have to, there doesn't feel as much judgment, and it always feels like you are a cheerleader on the other side of the table for us. And that is so helpful, and it means so much to us. So
I can't agree with that more. And the thing that rings true to me is respect. Like I think, and you know, for Jessica and I, who, you know, Jessica's now doing some principal roles, but have mainly been in the ensemble, I think that there's a level of respect that is not given to you when you do ensemble work from the other side of the table. And I've never, ever felt that from you guys. I just feel like I'm seen as the whole person that I am and what I can contribute to the piece. And I just, like Jessica said, like, I just love going in for your office. So,
Well, of course it's wonderful to hear that. And thank you. But when people tell us that, I have to always say that to do less than that would not just not be acceptable as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's the way Vinny and Jeff did it. And you just kind of, you do have to think that this person got the material last night and he still learned a song. Or, you know, he got she got the material this morning and I know she took a child to school, but this is, at least she's got this much going, you know? And so it's like to be less than that. I feel like I shouldn't get credit for it because it should be like the be the base.
It should be for sure. You know? But you know, I think it has to do with it starts at the top, right? With everything. I mean, with our country right now, you know, like what's happening as it trickles down from him. No, but I just, you know, it sets, you are Tara Rubin casting and you set the tone. And I do think it, like you said, with Vinny and Jeff, like they showed you how to be that way and made a warm environment and created a great workplace. And you've carried that over to your office. And it trickles down whenever there's someone in the position at the top who is warm and caring and respectful of people's time and their energy and appreciative of the work that's being done, then those underneath them follow suit.
Absolutely.
And also you tend to hire people who have the same vibe, you know, the same energy. And
well, I have been thinking recently about, because, you know, I had Eric Woodall with me for so long, and then Lindsay and Caitlin both went on to do other things. And so it has made me think a little bit about, you know, the values of our office and like what they are. And that is definitely one of them, to always treat our, you know, the actors with respect and our teams with respect, that we show up with our materials organized and that we have, you know, really done the best we can with each audition, that it's not just thrown together or any of that. So thank you.
I was just going to say something I wanted to ask you about, and we sort of have touched on women and auditioning, but you know, there's a struggle, I think, sometimes to come into the room and be seen when you're pregnant for projects that are in the future. And sometimes I think actors, we talk about how there's a lack of imagination with them being able to see that and who we will be after the fact.
Yeah.
Do you find
there's a lack of imagination with like hair color. Yeah. Sometimes. I remember being told to go out and buy a wig for an audition. Cause they're like, they're not going to take you seriously. Cause you're blonde.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If you're blonde, you're an ingenue.
Yeah, exactly. But it was that literally happened to me, but I'm, you know, so I can't imagine how someone walking in being pregnant might be.
And I know that you, being a woman and a mother, you're able, I'm sure, to imagine that differently than perhaps the men behind the table. And have you noticed that that's a challenge of sorts, or?
I haven't really.
Do you bring people in even when they're pregnant? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course.
But, you know, it hasn't happened that much. Mm. I remember Liz Callaway did Miss Saigon like 6 weeks or 8 weeks after her baby was born. Mm-hmm. And so she was pregnant during that process. I've never heard anyone say, well, she can't get the job, she's pregnant. Right. Or like, we can't possibly imagine what she'll be like when she's not pregnant. So we can't take her seriously today. Okay. I can't. I don't remember hearing that happen.
Phew. Well, yeah. Tara, that's refreshing.
That's refreshing.
Because, you know, I mean, actors, we get all in our head, too. And we'll be like, oh, I'm sure they just wrote me off. I mean, I know it, like you said, there have been moments where like, well, we don't know if she would consider it because she is a mother or things like that. But it's nice to know that someone on the other side of the table is stepping up and saying, well, let's ask the person. Mm-hmm. Let's ask her and not assume. Yeah,
I think that's the most egregious thing that I've ever done is, you know, kind of stop myself by saying, she has a child. And then, you know, having to remind myself, like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably, and I think we all kind of have to keep ourselves from thinking that way.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen other discriminations against pregnant women.
Oh, that's good.
That's wonderful.
I want to say this about what Rick Ellis said.
I want to read the quote.
Yeah. Do you want to read it? Rick Ellis has said of your office, Tara and her team aren't merely casting people. They are creative partners. They treat each project with a kind of care and respect and attention that parents try to give their kids. It's personal with them, and they become partners in the birth and upbringing of our children. And after all, that's how we see our shows, as our babies. Like all good parents, these folks are devoted and endlessly tenacious. Like all good partners, they are fiercely loyal and jaw-droppingly creative. So we just want to say... That's all true. Yeah. I mean, that's a hell of a quote. I mean,
I also really love lovely. that your value is being held to the standard of a parent. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the whole basis for this quote is saying that you are so special because you treat these projects as your babies, and that what you bring to the table is what a parent brings to a child. I mean, I just think there's so much beauty in that.
Yeah.
I love that quote. When we first decided that we would do a website, we were consulting with website people, and someone said, you should really get a quote from someone. And Rick is really close we're very close with him and love him so much. And so he seemed like a good person to ask. And I think he wrote that about 4 or 5 years ago, but I can't bear to take it down.
Rings true. Why would you ever take it down?
It's so true. Like,
but he is such a talented and creative,
a lovely
and
person.
Wonderful person.
Yeah.
And,
Well, love him. We want to say thank you for paving the way. Thank you for showing that you can be a mother and be powerful and claim
your place.
Yeah. And place in this world.
Yeah. I mean, a woman first and foremost, Tara Rubin Casting is, I mean, I can't really think of another casting office in theater. That's, of your magnitude and size and success. So you really have, paved the way for future women and mothers to do something similar.
Well, I'm learning from you all the time, too, you know, that, and so, you know, going back to earlier in this conversation, we talked about, like, my having to adjust my thinking about things. So I appreciate what I get back from you all with the way you are kind of changing the way it is to be a mom in the workplace and in the theater. So, keep that up because it helps me, you know?
Well, thank you, Tara.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It.
Yeah.
And thank you for being
thank
here.
Thank you so
this
much.
This was fun.
Yeah, so lovely.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.